Welcome to the With Counseling Podcast. I'm JJ Blanford, founder and therapist at With Counseling. In today's episode, we are going to talk about getting unstuck from negative emotions.
So when I think about negative emotions, the thing I immediately go to is anger. I don't know, fear. Like, these feel like emotions that most people can feel trapped in very easily. Is that what we're talking about with negative emotions?
Yes. And I would say, you know, anger, sadness, anxiety are kind of what we would consider negative emotion.
Right.
I think really, though, my pushback to that would be we have like put emotion in good and bad. And emotions are just emotions. Like, we all have this breadth of feeling, and there are some that maybe feel more uncomfortable to us. And so we would classify that as a bad emotion, when in reality, it's just an emotion. Maybe the feeling that it evokes doesn't feel good, but it doesn't mean that the emotion itself is bad.
Okay. We should just always, I like to always preface that I don't like emotions and I think they're dumb. So I'm always like learning a lot about emotions. So, but I mean, I feel like most people in their experience of anger or sadness, I mean, that feels very negative. So how is that not a negative, or how are all emotions, you know, kind of on the neither good nor bad, I guess?
It's being curious in about our own life. It's noticing, what is this anger telling me about my experience, about my relationship, about my current life circumstances? And so the emotion may be uncomfortable, but it doesn't mean that that's bad. And I think that's why none of us like to sit in discomfort. That's why a lot of people don't go to therapy, right? Because it is way easier to sit in my own discomfort that I feel comfortable in, for lack of a better term. Yeah. And so sometimes acknowledging, like, I don't like how this feels, doesn't feel good. And so it's easier to just kind of normalize those feelings of like, this is a bad emotion, anger is dumb, versus what is my anger telling me about myself, my life, or my circumstances?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And I feel like, but it's interesting because no one's like, oh man, I'm just trapped in joy. I just can't get away from joy. I just keep being like this joy just keeps coming over me like you would anger or sadness. You know what I mean? Where it's like, hey, I go through my day. All of a sudden I'm zero sadness and now I'm 100 sadness. You know, positive emotions don't seem to sort of hit us in quite the same way as some of these negative emotions or negative responses.
Well, I also think there's just not a lot of space to talk about. Like, no one wants to be around the person who's like, gosh, so much joy. Yeah, like, they're mocked in a way that's of fair. Like, oh, they're naive. They're, you know, lots of descriptors.
Yeah.
Whereas, I don't know that any of us would be like, I appreciate, but sometimes I think we appreciate someone who's like, oh, I'm in grief. That made me angry. That feels more real to us versus someone who's living in like a more joyous state.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. So what does it mean to be stuck in some of these emotions that we may call negative, but are actually trying to tell us something? That doesn't mean we're still can't feel stuck in them, right?
For sure. And I think, again, this goes back to this idea of noticing of what are the events, what are the patterns, what are the people that are leading me to this place of feeling these emotions. So sometimes in noticing, it's this idea of what about this relationship is making me feel angry. So sometimes it's loss of control. I could probably talk to most of my clients on any given week about a feeling of losing control creates an emotional response. And so that could be something as significant as losing a loved one, losing a job, financial strain. It could also just be like, I was put on a project that I don't want to be a part of. And to maintain my job, I have to keep doing what is asked of me. Or, you know, your child is biting or hitting at daycare and you feel out of control as a parent to change someone else's behavior. And so there are so many different things that could happen in our life that could, you know, create that feeling of loss of control. And so it's, how do I center myself again? How do I come back to a space where I'm regulated, that I can notice what this feeling is actually teaching me? So this idea, your kid is misbehaving at daycare, right? Out of control. You could feel embarrassed. Yeah. You could feel disappointed.
Yeah. Shame, maybe?
Yes, all of these things, but it's easier to say, oh, I'm sad that this event happened.
Right.
And so sometimes the noticing is realizing there's actually more emotion happening under the surface. There's more emotions going on than what you're actually, you know, naming a certain, the emotion that you're tying to something. It could be much more vast than we're giving it credit to be.
So it'd be easier if there's just less emotions, is what you're saying.
No.
No. Okay. Gotcha. I just had to just throw it out there. Just makes, yes, I definitely see what you're saying, because there are all these little things that play into, like, maybe my feeling of anger. Anger seems to be one that, like, you know, for me just is so, like, sadness. Yes, it comes on me, but something like anger is just like, you know, it hits you like a ton of bricks. And I feel like you feel it, or at least I feel it more in my body than I do other emotions, you know? So how does, you know, I mean, it's not like you're in control when you go from maybe 0 to 100 in anger or something, right? So how does noticing, you know, what's causing that, like, keep that from happening, or at least help us to move past that?
I think part of it, again, is the noticing, right? Like you are saying, when I feel angry, I start to notice that in my body.
Right.
So you have to address that feeling and potentially behaviors that come with it when you're starting to notice that arise in your body. Okay. I often equate it to when you're driving a car. If you go 0 to 100, it is very hard to stop at 100. Versus if you're 0 to 30, it's much easier to stop at 30. And so many of us are wanting to address emotions and behave, often the behavior that is tied,
the symptom or what,
to the emotion when we're at 100,
right?
Where our lid is flipped, like our brain is not online. We don't have the actual capacity to make that behavioral change at that point. And so we have to wait till our body is regulated again, till our brain is back online, till we can have logical thoughts, express our emotion, engage in communication to, like, address, hey, maybe next time when I start to feel my muscles tense, when I start to feel my heart race, how am I addressing that when I'm just noticing my physical response to an emotion versus, you know, when I'm really upset and acting out of that anger.
Right. Right. Cause we talk about the online brain versus the lid flip brain. Right. And so if you make a fist, right, this is the online brain, it's a whole brain, right? Purely, it's able to function.
Yes. And
I only know this because this is stuff you taught me. So if I'm wrong, you know, it's your fault.
great.
but the idea is, when your lid flips, right, your hand goes up, right, and it's straight up, and you no longer have all the cognitive functions. Your brain can't function with all of the thoughts that you can have when your brain's online, right? And so your cognitive function doesn't work. So you go to these, like, deeper places of, like, survival. Like, your brain's just trying to make it, right? And so when your brain is flipped, when you're at that 100, you are incapable of sort of coherent thought. Is that right? Or at least online thought is what I should say.
Well, and I think sometimes it's easier... Instead of acknowledging that we get to those places, it's easier to think about a child in our life of, like, you know, your toddler is losing their mind because you gave them the blue cup and not the green cup. And, like, there is no, like, orienting them back to like reality.
Right.
Our brains are the same way. We have just hopefully come up with more appropriate ways to express that, or we can internalize that. You know, we're not at work like throwing a tantrum that we got assigned an assignment that we wish someone else would have had, or something like that. So we've realized how to maybe mask those feelings.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that we're not in that same turmoil inside. And so I think most of us can think back to a time where we might have looked a little dysregulated to someone passing by. We might have looked cool, calm, and collected, and inside that emotion is churning and our thoughts are spinny, and you know, we have to regulate ourselves again. And so I think so much of this goes back to like this idea of how are we noticing? How are we noticing, again, those physiological responses to stressors, life stressors, so that we are calming and addressing that emotion, you know, before we get to 100.
Right. Because if we're at 100, the lid's flipped. There's no call. I mean, there's, you know, you're just, you're there, right? There's no kind of bringing it back really easily. So you're saying after that, you can kind of go back and notice what sort of things maybe precipitated that, what you were feeling before it happened. Is that kind of how this goes?
Yes. And I think some of it is, oh, of course, that interaction, like my boss said words to me that made me feel a way that like weren't even really your boss. It's what your parents said to you in childhood. Some of it is I was up with a sick kid all night and got 2 hours of sleep. My brain, the baseline with which I started was less than ideal. Yeah, and so I think, again, that noticing, my response was more severe, less severe, you know, whatever language you want to use, noticing, like, am I hungry? Like, hangry is a real thing.
Yeah.
I am the queen of hangry.
No comment.
Oh, smart man. And I think also sometimes it's like, well, my gosh, I didn't meet my basic needs of sleep, hydration, and food.
Yeah.
Again, back to that idea of a toddler, right? We've all been with a kid that it was like, oh, you just needed a snack. Why was snack like the 10th choice that I made versus the first when I know it's been 3 hours since breakfast? And so I think sometimes it's the noticing of like, how do I co-regulate? Sometimes it's the noticing of, am I caring for my body so that when a stressor shows up, I know how to deal with the emotion that comes with that stressor?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, for sure. And so over time, over noticing these things over time, you get to where you're not going 0 to 100, you're going 0 to 35 or 40, and then can kind of come back down to 0 a little bit easier because you're not putting those stressors on you, and you can kind of head those off before they really get to you, right? Is
that— Yes. And I think, again, this goes back to what we talked about last week of like therapy is a slow process, because you're not going to learn to go from 0 to 100, like 0 to 30, the next time that emotion shows up. And so I often tell clients, if you were able to go from 0 to 95 instead of 0 to 100, that is movement.
Sure.
I don't like progress, because I think that means like we're trying to get you to a certain goal.
Right.
But just noticing movement. One of the delights to me as a therapist is when a client shows up to session and is like, hey, guess what I did? And is excited to share like this thing that would have sent me off the rails 6 months ago. This is how I handled it, stayed regulated. I can name the emotions that came with that.
Right.
And I think it's really important, if you are trying to change a behavior, if the idea of even notice, like if we were talking about noticing and you're like, what the what? I think this is something that's going to take time.
Yeah.
There's not, like, having curiosity about emotions, mental health, those are not like switches that flip in our brain. It's kind of this slow, progressive work. And I think even having that expectation moving forward is really helpful on your journey.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense, right? I think we talked about this last time. You know, you got this way over time, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't a switch that flipped. Yeah. So what are, I mean, outside of therapy, obviously, you know, walking alongside somebody is helpful. And I know there's got to be practical tools for, like, you know, what would you say to somebody who, you know, giving them some tools to kind of work through getting unstuck from these emotions? We'll call them emotions instead of negative emotions.
I think sometimes it's just noticing, but taking the time to, you know, like, write these thoughts down.
Yeah.
And not in the notes app on your phone, but taking a physical piece of paper and a physical writing utensil and writing some of these things out.
But the notes app's really convenient. You know that, right?
And okay, if you are engaged in writing your note,
yeah,
text comes in, call comes in, you get an email alert.
Okay.
You are distracted from the work that you're trying to do because you are on a digital device that is just pinging you all the time to keep you distracted.
Right.
And so sometimes it's writing, like, coming home at the end of the day and being like, it was a bad day. Okay, let me walk through my day. Was it bad in its entirety? Well, like, this part was bad. It was nice to connect with that coworker. I had the best lunch that I'm, like, made. Yay for me. My commute didn't take as long as usual. And I got home with, you know, an extra 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It just kind of helps, that noticing helps parse out, I guess, these different emotions that could exist in a day versus this whole blanket, it was good or bad, or I was angry or sad.
Yeah. And I feel like maybe some people think that you could do that in your brain. Oh, if I just get home and I could think through my day, but it doesn't feel like that's the same. Like, writing it down has a different power than sort of like thinking back through the day, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Or if you're like, I'm never going to write things down, how do you sit with, you know, a partner, a child, a friend, and say, like, what, you know, there's so many different, the, like, rose analogy, like the flower and a thorn. There's another one. But, you know, it's looking at, like, something good, something hard, a high, low, you know, whatever the thing is. Yeah. If you're like, journaling is not for me, or I'm not ready to make that commitment, how is it to sit with another person and have to actually think, what was something positive about this day? Because most of us can name lots of hard things on any given day.
Sure.
It takes some thought and intentionality to potentially look for a glimmer of good.
Yeah.
Caveat with that, not in a toxic positivity way of how, like, oh, your life is seeped in grief. Like, find the goodness, find the joy. Yeah,
for sure.
And was there a place that you felt connection with another person? Did your kiddo make you laugh? Was the sun shining and it was warm when you got in your car? Like, sometimes we are in a place that feels so dark and desperate, we are looking for the tiniest glimmer of light.
Right.
And so my belief is we find what we're looking for. And I think sometimes when we are in a place of pain or darkness, that's really easy to only find that. What would it be like to just look for a glimmer of goodness or light?
Yeah. So when we feel stuck in these what we've called now we're just calling emotions, even though they feel negative, right? When we're stuck in these things, so just a mere processing or you know, writing something down can be like a powerful way to just like get unstuck. Is that kind of?
Yes. With the knowledge, I think sometimes we want to be unstuck and then be forever unstuck.
Right. Okay.
And so sometimes it's acknowledging I'm not stuck right now.
Yeah.
And I'm appreciating not being stuck right now, knowing full well, I may be back to stuck tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because I experienced unstuckness, very clinical term.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
And there's hope that I could have that same feeling again. And I think that's really important to think about, right? Like, we're using our own experience of, I remember what it felt like to not feel stuck. How do I help myself feel that way again?
Yeah.
And while I think, you know, self-help and motivational stories are lovely, sometimes our own story is where we find the most strength, right? Sometimes we do need to borrow someone else's hope or their journey. And getting to a place that we can recognize our own strength, our own story, our own hope, really, I believe, is kind of what fuels us moving forward.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It almost builds on itself, right? Yes. Once you experience that, you know, not being trapped in that for a long period of time, it's like, oh, you know, it builds and the positivity kind of comes.
Because I also think, like, even talking about this stuckness, it feels like quicksand.
Yeah.
That, like, just pulls you in.
For sure.
And if we can just see it as like mud.
Yeah.
Right? That you could step out of versus this thing that is like sucking you into it, which I don't know. Maybe that's a weird picture. But I think there's something to it. It also gives you a little bit of power, that feeling of power of, I have the opportunity to move outside of this. Like, it is bringing me down. These are really real feelings, and it's not going to totally consume me. I have some skills to kind of help move myself forward.
That makes sense. As just even as you're giving that analogy and talking, I feel like some of the most stuckness doesn't come from actual the experience of that emotion, but it comes from the shame that comes from having that emotion happen over and over and over again. And I've experienced that in my life. Like, why can't I just be better? And like, why do I keep, you know, and then the shame spiral comes and then it's just like builds on itself and it becomes sort of this toxic mud, right? Or something. Yeah. So I wonder if it isn't even the emotion per se sometimes, but it's the shame associated with our own failures that leads us to those feelings. Is that?
Yeah. And I think it's so easy to get into that shame spiral.
Right.
And then it's hard to get out. And so how, again, tying it back to the 0 to 100, how do you notice, oh, I'm headed toward that shame spiral. What do I need to do? Who do I need to connect with? How do I move my body so that I can intervene on my own behalf and kind of bring myself back to that place of regulation? Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense. It's like, feels like choosing health in some way is part of it, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I think choosing health when that's available to you, right? Yeah. Like, and equipping yourself with tools, skills, people.
For sure.
So that, I think that's part of the noticing too of, I'm isolating. How am I connecting with other humans? I'm, you know, engaging in this negative behavior. What have I, you know, identified as kind of a healthier coping skill to engage in? And so it's, again, it's that noticing. Am I moving towards the things that are healthy to me? Am I moving towards the thing that I know bring unhealth?
Yeah.
And just having that curiosity about, in what direction am I heading? What do I have control over? How I cope?
Yeah, that's good. It's good. So I need to connect with friends. I think that's a good thing. You know, connecting with others, talking about noticing, right? And then I need to go buy a really expensive journal and the perfect journaling pen. So I need to start researching all the stuff I need to buy. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
And maybe journaling is one of my many soapboxes. Because I do think, well, as a woman, I feel like it is often sold to us as find your beautiful journal with your special pen, la 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 la. And if that works for you, great.
Right.
So many people feel like that's unattainable. Or what happens if I misspell a word? Like, do you cross it out? Right. Do you, like,
it's gotta look so pretty.
And the whole journal then is ruined because now there's this, like,
take out that one page.
Marred word.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times I talk to people about, it's what I call brain dumping, where it's finding that random spiral that, you know, you have left over from grad school that's like half full and you don't actually know why it's still on the shelf. Yeah. And it's just getting those thoughts and feelings out. It doesn't have to be pristine or kept. I am shocked at the number of people who feel freedom when I say, oh, you never have to look at that again. You can rip out those pages, throw them in the trash, put them in your fire pit. Like, those things can go away. It doesn't have to be held in its it doesn't have to be held for all eternity in that special journal that is like pristine and sits on your shelf. Like, sometimes we need to get some of the yuck out and like literally get it out of your, like, it's out of your body. Now you put it in the garbage and the garbage goes to the curb and that is out of your life. Mm. Again, not that you do this once and those feelings never come back. And so many of my clients talk about, I thought you were crazy with this journal thing, and yet writing my emotions out, again, it's a piece we can control.
Yeah.
And so you can use whatever language or, you know, like sometimes I believe brain dumping just becomes like stream of consciousness. There's not like punctuation and it is just a literal blah onto a page.
Interesting. Okay.
And so I think sometimes it's even thinking through any of these coping skills of, you know, I saw deep breathing shown in this way. That doesn't work for me.
Right.
Then make that tool work for you. Like, there's not a one size fits all in all of this. And so if having a beautiful journal with beautiful pens is your jam, do that. That's amazing.
That's more my style.
Hundo P. And I think to realize, like, how do I use a tool in a way that is meaningful to me is what's most important.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's really helpful. And those are like really practical things that I feel like I could probably like sit down and do. You know what I mean? I feel like so many times when you talk about mental health sort of tactics or whatever, it's just like there's such a long tail to it. And, you know, it's just like, can I actually do that? I mean, like writing down my, you know, what I'm feeling on a piece of paper feels very doable, you know?
Absolutely. I think going back to that idea of gratitude, that's also a really helpful place, or goodness, or whatever you want to call it. I feel like gratitude journals are their own form of marketing, but sometimes we need to be noticing the goodness in our own life and keeping a running tab of that so that when you feel yourself moving back to that place of despair, sadness, anger, that you can use your own story and experience to say, like, this is what I've seen in my own life. And I may not have these feelings now, but this is a reminder to myself that they have existed in the past. And I'm hopeful that they'll exist again in the future.
Yeah, that's powerful. It's sort of like that positivity sort of building on itself that we talked about earlier, right?
Yeah.
So you don't have a gratitude journal I could buy? Is that, that's not?
That is true.
Oh, man. Okay. We got to figure that out. Okay. That's awesome. I think we nailed it. I think we covered it
in its entirety, as always. Perfect. I hope you enjoyed today's episode and got practical ideas about how to process through your own feelings of stuckness and emotion. I would love to hear your thoughts and feedback. You can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Counseling With, or send me an email through my website at counselingwith.com.